tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radio.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 26th of January, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to say at the beginning of this week, there won't be a Daily Nationalist tomorrow because we have Germar Rudolph's Holocaust Summit, which we will be restreaming all day. So that will be on the Radio Albion stream, and I'm hoping that we will also have some of the speeches or interviews as podcasts that we will put on the main site afterwards. We will have Parish of the Patriots on tomorrow because there is a 2-hour break for lunch. And while the historians are taking their lunch break, we will have Parish of the Patriots on the Radio Albion stream. And it should be a really interesting day. I'm very much looking forward to listening to it. If people aren't really aware of these things, if they're new to it, what we were actually told happened in World War II is often contradicted by eyewitness reports and forensic investigations. In fact, the mainstream narrative that we've been told about World War II, a lot of it is actually refuted by forensic investigations and eyewitness accounts. And the historians that look into this, the revisionist historians, are often persecuted for doing this in Europe. I think there are 27 countries in Europe which have Holocaust denial laws, which means effectively if you investigate World War II, you run the risk of being sent to prison. So tomorrow there is a Holocaust summit, which is organised by Germar Rudolph, who is probably the world's foremost revisionist historian. And he has got together various other revisionist scholars to talk about their research. And it will be going on all day Eastern time, I think, 9 a.m. Eastern time till 4 p.m. Eastern time, which means that we'll be starting with it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon over here in Britain. And it won't finish till about 1 o'clock in the morning, but we'll finish live streaming it probably around about midnight. And the last speech that we get, which I think will be Germar Rudolph, will have that recorded so that we can put that out as a podcast the following day. But I will be busy doing the simulcasting for that, so I won't have time to record a Daily Nationalist. As I say, I'm looking forward to it, and I do hope our normal listeners will tune in for that, particularly if this is the first time you've really heard anything about World War II revisionism and you want to know what this accusation of Holocaust denial is actually about, because quite clearly it's not people that want to insult Jews. It's historians that have looked into World War II and discovered that there are these discrepancies, particularly with the findings of the Nuremberg trials. When we talk about facts, we think, well, a fact is something that is established, and when courts come to their decisions, that is called an established fact. But that is on the understanding that courts uphold the law in the way that the trial proceeds. But in the Nuremberg Tribunal, the normal rules of law were not applied. The law that you are not allowed to use confessions that have been brought about by torture, for instance, was ignored at the Nuremberg trials. The law that says that you are only allowed to use eyewitness evidence and not hearsay evidence was ignored, which meant that when people said, well, I heard that they were gas chambers, or a friend of mine said that he saw the gas chambers, that was entered in as evidence. Whereas in a normal court of law, they would say, well, you didn't actually see it yourself, then that is not admissible. So the findings of the Nuremberg Tribunal cannot really properly be looked at as established facts, because the established rule of law of how to conduct a tribunal was ignored. And that's just one of the reasons why revisionist historians are discovering things that contradict the mainstream narrative about World War II. And that's what is going to be discussed tomorrow at the Holocaust Summit. So I hope you tune in for that. And I personally am looking forward to it as well. Well, today I want to take a look at the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan's recent speech to the Fabian Society. And the Fabian Society, their logo is actually a wolf in sheep's clothing, which really gives you an idea of what they were about. They were about the long march through the institutions, about infiltrating institutions and subverting them from within with liberal ideas. And they're still going today, and there are various British prime ministers and politicians that are still a part of this organisation, and Sadiq Khan is one of them. Sir Sadiq Khan has launched an attack on Reform UK and the Conservative Party for dancing to the tune of the far right. And that's an interesting phrase there, far right, because it is seen as an insult. It's a pejorative. It's linked to words like racist, white and white supremacist and fascist. But it shouldn't be. When I was going through my licence period, I was having regular conversations with someone who was a bit of an expert in the so-called far right. And we would talk about geopolitics, and we would talk about what was on in the news. And his general role was to try and ensure that I didn't offend again, that I didn't use hate speech again in my podcast. So we would discuss all the news that was happening, and he would tell me the sort of opposing point of view, and I would give him the nationalist point of view. And one of the things he said was that this actual term far right, what it actually means is the furthest to the right of the political spectrum. So what it means is the people that are furthest to the right in the established political parties. So Jacob Rees-Mogg would be considered to be far right because he's furthest to the right of the Conservative Party. Reform would be considered far right because they are furthest to the right of the established political parties. It does not mean extremism. It does not mean extremist. It just means the furthest to the right of the political spectrum. Yet it has this link with these terms which you would use for extremists. It has a link with extremism, which has turned it into a pejorative term, and it really shouldn't be a pejorative term. When you talk about the far left, that's not seen as an insult. It's not seen that you're insulting somebody to say that they are far left. You would say Jeremy Corbyn is the far left. He is furthest to the left of the established left-wing political parties. And you could say that Nigel Farage is one of the furthest to the right of the established right-wing political parties. Yet that isn't the way that these things are understood. When you call somebody far right, it's considered to be an insult. And this really just shows you how far to the left our establishment is and how far to the left our society is today, that we see that people that are furthest to the right of the established political organisations, it's an insult to say that they are actually furthest to the right. So it's wrong that it is a pejorative. It shouldn't be a pejorative. It should be used in a correct way. But the fact that it does get seen as an insult, as I say, it just shows you how far to the left society is. Speaking at a conference for left-wing think tank, the Fabian Society, the Labour Mayor of London took aim at his political opponents and the rise of far-right populism across Europe. And this is another interesting term, populism, populist. What does it mean to be a populist? Well, it means that you are popular. And isn't that what democracy is supposed to be about? Isn't it supposed to be the most popular person wins the vote? Yet, apparently, and this is not just Sadiq Khan here, but the term populist is also seen as an insult. So they're effectively saying, if you are popular, that's wrong. You shouldn't be popular. But the whole point of democracy is to be popular. So again, this is another phrase that shouldn't be seen as an insult, but it is actually taken as an insult. And Sadiq Khan means it as an insult here. He thinks that we shouldn't have populism. He thinks that we shouldn't have the far right. He wants to eliminate the far right, and he wants to eliminate populism. But effectively, that's saying that he wants to eliminate democracy if he wants to get rid of populism. In a speech at the Society's New Year conference, Sir Sadiq encouraged individuals not to be afraid to highlight the enormous benefits of immigration. Well, I don't think anybody is afraid to highlight the enormous benefits of immigration. That's all we ever hear about in the mainstream press. What about highlighting the enormous harms that immigration have caused? What about the sexual assaults? What about the rapes? What about the increase in property crime? It was only last week that we were talking on here on the Daily Nationalist about how 80% of all theft that occurs on British trains is carried out by illegal immigrants. We know that Afghans and Eritreans are over 20 times more likely to sexually assault or rape women than the indigenous British are. These are the sort of harms that are caused by immigration. And that's not yet bringing in the problems that are caused for our services, such as schools. We don't have enough room in our schools. We don't have enough room in our hospitals. We don't even have enough room in our sewage pipes for all the sewage that is being caused by the increase in immigration. So just as much as Sadiq Khan wants people to not be afraid of highlighting the enormous benefits of immigration, as we are his opponents, we should not be afraid to highlight the harms of immigration. But of course, we are frightened too, because if we are talking about these harms of immigration, if we use old-fashioned English, or if we use the sort of language we were brought up to use, and you're over a certain age, then you run the risk of being sent to prison for complaining about it, because they'll say that you are inciting hate because you are using certain terms that today would be considered insults. So you have to be careful when you are talking about the harms of immigration, and we shouldn't have to be careful about it any more than the people that want to promote the benefits of it have to be careful about the way that they speak. They aren't careful about the way that they speak. They can speak without any concern in the world. But us, as the opponents of that, as the people that want remigration, we have to be careful about the way that we talk about these things, but it shouldn't prevent us from talking about them. Sadiq Khan continued, "I'm going to use my speech this afternoon to talk about some issues that have become contentious and weighed heavily on our politics over recent years, immigration and integration." And integration is an interesting thing. Civic nationalists will say, well, the problem is these people don't integrate. They don't integrate well. But why would they integrate? What does integrate mean? Well, it means to lose your culture, to lose your ethnicity, your sense of identity. It's white people that seem to have all these problems. It's not the newcomers. They have a sense of ethnic identity. They know where they've come from, and they're encouraged to celebrate where they've come from. They're encouraged to identify with their ethnic group. If they do identify with their ethnic group, they will get certain benefits, like they'll get preferred for certain jobs that are looking for black and minority ethnic people. And essentially, I don't think people should integrate. I think integration causes a problem. If you look at, say, for instance, Muslim women, and they become integrated, and that can cause problems for them at home. Their family can see them as being too Western. In the worst case, they could you could end up with an honour killing. You could end up with a young girl that's been murdered by her father or her brothers for being too integrated, for being too Western. And in the best instances, where they're not actually murdered, it's still going to cause arguments, and it's still going to cause problems. This integration thing is not helpful. And in actual fact, the more we see these people as actually being different to ourselves, the more likely we are to identify with our own ethnicity. And of course, this is what we see happening. The more multiculturalism there is, and the more obvious it is, with people walking around in burqas and in hijabs, the more we recognise our own identity, and the more we recognise that we are a separate ethnic group with our own needs and interests, and that we have legitimate political interests for our own group, and we want to be represented. And the more we see immigration happening, the more multiculturalism there is and the less integration there is, the more people are going to become ethnocentric, which I think is a good thing. So I don't want to see integration and I don't want to see immigration either. And these are the sorts of issues that are being talked about. He's correct. These issues are being talked about, both immigration and integration. He says, I do so not only because these issues are so fundamental to the story of my city and its continued success, but because they go to the heart of our values and who we are as a nation. Well, who is he talking about here? He's talking about the story of my city. So he sees London as his city. And when Sadiq Khan was voted in as the London mayor, Pakistan had people out on the streets shouting and celebrating because they saw it as a Pakistani is now the ruler of London. And who is to say that they were not correct? I mean, Sadiq Khan sees himself as a Pakistani, he sees himself as a Muslim, and he sees London as his city. And the people in Pakistan see it as his city as well. And they celebrated the fact that there was a Muslim that was ruling London. And what does this mean? Well, London is the capital city of England. It means that somebody who is not English, somebody who is not the descendant of the people that built London, is now its ruler. Now, doesn't that say that London is occupied? It's occupied by a foreign force? If you have somebody who is not one of the descendants of the people that built it, that is ruling it. But you can't take that in the absence of other things that are happening. And if you look at London, it's only 40% white British now. So the capital of the United Kingdom is only 40% made up of the people that built the United Kingdom. The rest of it is made of non-whites. And he sees it that that's what the nation is. It's this disparate group of all these different ethnicities. Well, that's not a nation. The word nation comes from the word natal, which means birth. And a nation is a group of people that are related to one another through their birth, not where they are born, not what part of the world they're born in, but who all their ancestors are, who all their relatives are. That's what a nation is. This idea that you can have a multicultural nation is a nonsense. It's just not the way that things are. You can have a country that is multicultural. You can have citizens which are not based in ethnicity, but are just based on what country they're in. But you can't actually change the nation itself. He sees it that they have. He sees that they are a new nation, which is made up of all these different groups. And a new nation that facilitates the rise of a Pakistani Muslim to becoming the ruler of London, essentially. And of course, people are concerned about that. He says the resurgence of far-right populism and nativism means that the idea that we can be diverse, united and prosperous is under threat like never before. Interesting that he uses the word nativism there, not nationalism. But it's the same thing, nativism, natal, birth. What he is saying is that there are natives to Britain. There are people that are native to Britain. And they are quite clearly concerned about this. So he sees the natives of Britain as his enemy here, as something that is a threat to him, is the native Britons, the people that actually built London. He sees them as a threat. He says it means that the idea that we can be diverse, united and prosperous is under threat. Well, you can't be both diverse and united. You can't be divided and you can't be united all in one. There is no such thing as diversity and unity. They're two opposite things. It even says this in the Bible. It says a nation divided against itself will not stand. It means that it will collapse. A house that's divided against itself will not stand, rather. Sorry, not a nation, but a house that is divided against itself will not stand. But that's essentially what it means, is a nation that is divided against itself. How would you divide a nation? Well, you'd put another nation in the middle of it, wouldn't you? And that's essentially what multiculturalism is. So this idea that you can be diverse and united at the same time, it's an impossible idea. And he sees this impossible idea as being under threat by the natives of Britain. So he's really being sort of quite clear who his opponents are And he really wants to just push this nonsense idea that you can have diversity and unity both at the same time. He continues, the White House's national security strategy recently made the preposterous claim that Europe is at risk of civilization erasure. Well, surely if you have mass immigration and you bring in massive numbers of another group of people, so much so that they replace the people that were there before, does that not mean that the people that were there before's civilization is being erased? And if you look at London, it's only 40% white British, 60% non-white British. And already Sadiq Khan is saying it's his London. So it's essentially saying that the London of the natives, the native London, is no longer there. It's been erased. It's been taken over by a non-native London. It's been taken over by Sadiq Khan's London. And that's not a preposterous claim. That's what's actually happened. And we have examples throughout history of people building civilizations and people groups from outside that civilization moving into that country, and then that civilization collapses. I mean, one of the first that I can think of is the Indus River Valley civilization. And we talked about this in the Patriotic History series. And if people are interested to know about this sort of thing in history and how multiculturalism has happened so many times and what the end result of it is, then I recommend they listen to the Patriotic History series. The Indus River Valley civilization was actually in Pakistan. And there was a highly technically capable people that built a civilization, and they had running water, and they had wells, and they had multi-story houses. And a group came in from outside the group that built the civilization. And within about 100 years, they had smashed all the statues, smashed everything, destroyed everything. And all we have now to show of that civilization is literally broken statues where a new people came in from outside and destroyed it. So that's the example that we have of civilization erasure. It happens when an alien group of people come in such numbers into the civilization that was built by the former group of people that they destroy it. I mean, you see the same thing happening in Syria with ISIS. When they went into Syria, they were destroying the statues, the Roman statues and the Greek statues, and destroying them because they knew that they were nothing to do with their civilization. They were to do with the white people from the West. So they destroyed it. So this idea that Europe is at risk of civilization erasure, that's exactly what we've seen happening in history, throughout history, again and again and again. You see civilizations being erased because the people that built the civilization are no longer the people that are there. I mean, they said this about Greece. They said the problem with Athens is it's no longer full of Athenians. And then the Greek civilization collapsed. The problem with Rome is that it's no longer full of Romans. It's full of these groups that came in from outside of Rome, and Rome collapsed. So the idea that Europe is at risk of civilization erasure from mass immigration, which is what the White House national security strategy was saying, is quite clearly true. But according to Sadiq Khan, it's preposterous. So again, he just insults it. He doesn't actually come out with any counter argument or evidence to counter this claim. He just calls it preposterous. The far right, see, again, he just comes up with an insult, is spreading the same message in Europe with the National Rally in France, the AfD in Germany, the PVV in the Netherlands, and the Brothers of Italy. Yes, it's very good that there is this resurgence of nationalism or nativism, as Sadiq Khan calls it. It's very good that there is this resurgence of this throughout Europe at the moment. And the reason why it's happening is because of multiculturalism. That is the cause of this. That is the cause of people self-identifying with their ethnicity, is if you put representatives of other ethnicities all around you, then you are going to self-identify with your own ethnicity. And one example of this, that really the example to end all other examples, is Jews. They have existed as a minority amongst their host nations for about 2,000 years. And they're the most ethnocentric group of all, because they are reminded all the time by the people that are around them that they are not Jews. the people around them are not Jews, and they themselves are Jews. So their ethnocentrism is extreme, really. And you're now starting to see the same thing with white people, because we are becoming closer and closer to becoming minorities in our own countries. This sense of ethnocentrism, this sense of ethnic identity, is rising. And the result of that is all these civic nationalist parties throughout Europe. Sadiq Khan continues, over here, Reform and the Tories are dancing to the same tune. They paint a dystopian picture of London as a city that has fallen. Well, it is a dystopian picture of London. It's no longer full of Londoners, is it? All the Londoners have left. It's only 40% of them that are actual Londoners. The new people that are there, they might call themselves Londoners, but they're not the descendants of the people that built London. And if you look at the crime rate there, if you look at the stabbings that take place every day, and murders that take place, it is a dystopia, isn't it? It was only a couple of years back that there were more murders in London that month than there were in New York City. In the whole of New York City, there are more murders in London. I would say London's probably the murder capital of the country. It is a dystopia. Sadiq Khan continues, let us be frank. They do so, that is the Reform and the Tories, because they cannot stand what London represents, a city that is diverse, that is progressive and thriving, with a mayor who happens to be a Muslim. Well, that is, I think that is quite right. People are concerned that London is no longer majority white. That, of course, that is going to be a concern to white people. I'm sure for Sadiq Khan, it would be a concern for him if Kabul was full of 90% white people and only 10% Afghans. I think that would be a concern for him. The same with Pakistan. What he thinks is so wonderful, this diversity, it benefits him, but it doesn't benefit the people that built the city. It doesn't benefit white Britons to have London diverse, does it? It means that they are divided. It means that the white Londoners are divided against one another, not just physically, because you have these other groups that are living there, but also because then you have divided loyalties amongst the white people. There are those whites who, self-hating whites, that will support Sadiq Khan, that like multiculturalism, that support all of these woke ideas. And he's been very clever, because although he is a Muslim and although he is non-white, he supports all of these woke ideas. So he gets the best of both worlds. He gets the people that are going to vote him in because they're also Muslim, and he gets the people that are going to vote him in because of all these left-wing ideas. And they may even be members of religions which are quite right-wing, such as Islam. But because he's progressive and supports the idea of multiculturalism and encouraging Muslims to celebrate their Muslimness, they're going to vote him in anyway, even though they know that he is he's left-wing and he's not right-wing. It's quite clear that he will always be voted in now, I think, because of the demographics in London. Of course, it might not be that it's solely down to the demographics, but a lot of it will be down to it. A lot of it will be down to the fact that London is now full of Muslims, and they see there is a Muslim candidate for mayor, so they are going to vote for him. And of course, the Muslim world thinks it's wonderful, and they all cheer this on, because their ethnic loyalty is to Sadiq Khan, just as Sadiq Khan's ethnic loyalty is to the Pakistanis that he comes from. He continued, the fact that this is the greatest city in the world makes a mockery of their entire world view. Well, perhaps it used to be the greatest city in the world, but since Britain lost all its prestige after the end of World War II, Britain is right down low in the list of nations with any power. Britain used to have an empire on which the sun would never set, and now we don't have an empire. We have a capital city, which is probably the capital city in Europe for acid attacks, probably the capital city for stabbings. If you look at the number of people that were caught with a bladed weapon, for instance, in the 1920s, and compare that to today, there's more people caught in a day today with a bladed weapon than were caught with knives or used knives as a weapon back in the 1920s. I did a podcast about this some years back, looking at the actual statistics for it. So London is no longer a great city. And if it was a great city, what made it great was the people that built it, who were all Britons. It wasn't made great by the fact that it is now full of Pakistanis or full of Bangladeshis or any of these other groups that make up the diversity of London. He says, so they construct lies. They seek to manufacture an enemy, pit citizens against one another for political gain, and stoke fear by blaming the other for all of society's ills. And I would say, well, that's really the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it? He's constructing this myth, this obvious untruth that diversity is a strength and that diversity is unity. Well, you can't have division and unity at the same time. He says, we seek to manufacture an enemy. Well, we understand that the enemy comes from within. We don't blame the migrants for coming to Britain. We blame our own representatives for facilitating it. The problem comes from within. So we're not manufacturing an enemy. Pitting citizens against one another for political gain, that's exactly what our representatives have done by giving us this false dichotomy of right wing and left wing, when really we should have people that just put the needs of the indigenous British first. Why would you be concerned about right wing or left wing? You want representatives that are going to put your needs first. And that's what ethno-nationalism is. And we don't have that. We have representatives that put the needs of other groups first. And it says here that blaming the other for all of society's ills. Again, it's not blaming this other group. This is this left-wing idea that we just don't like other groups because we don't like skin colours. And that's not what it is at all. And race is far more deeper than a skin colour. Anyway, the people that are responsible for the situation we are in is ourselves. And the only people that can change it is ourselves. He says, this rhetoric isn't just false, it is cruel, callous, and deeply dangerous. That's why we must fight back against this narrative that diversity is inherently bad for our society, and therefore all immigration is too. And, you know, that might be true for him. It might be true for him. Diversity is inherently bad for one of these minority groups that have come into the host nation. Of course it's not bad for them. And he says here that immigration is all bad too. Well, it's not going to be bad for these groups that are coming into the society, is it? Diversity and immigration is going to be bad for the host nation that has to put up with dividing its resources between itself and these other groups that come in. It's not going to be good for the indigenous people. But of course, diversity and immigration is going to be absolutely wonderful if you're one of these other groups that are now living within the nation. The more diversity there is, the better. The more diversity is, the less they stand out. I mean, originally in Britain, you had white people and you had Jews. And this is one of the reasons why Jews like diversity so much, is because when there's just white people and Jews, it's not difficult to tell who is a Jew and who is white. And the Jews would stand out. So one of the reasons why they like diversity so much is, if you have lots of black and brown people mixed in as well, then the Jews look more like they are indigenous Britons than they look like they are black or brown, and they stand out less. And that's actually one of the reasons why Jews like diversity so much. So diversity can be good for Jews. It could be good for Muslims, black and brown people, but it's not going to be good for white people, because it's this diversity which is dividing the white people against each other. You know, this is why we have these arguments and we have this right wing and left wing nonsense dichotomy, when really all we should really have is it good for white people? Is it not good for white people? Is it good for British people? Is it not good for British people? And of course, by British people, I mean people of British ethnicity, not people that are British citizens. Of course, to be a British citizen, you can be any ethnicity whatsoever. But to actually be of British ethnicity, you have to have British ancestry. So it's interesting that Sadiq Khan is coming out with this speech at the Fabian Society as well, this extreme left organisation. And it's good to look at the things that he's saying and to analyse them, because it gives us an insight into the mind of our opponents. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Wednesday with more of the Daily Nationalist. Tomorrow we have Germán Rudolph's Holocaust Summit. So until then, I shall see you on Wednesday. God bless and hail victory.